challenges that come with touring, I didn't really expect at first. Like, learning how to tour is a real thing, and I think that's something that's not really widely spoken about. Once you get on tour, sometimes nothing goes to plan, like some weird ass things happen, and then you're, how to say, improvise, adapt, overcome. And I think that's also has helped me grow as a person quite a bit.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Approachable. My name is Joe Henderson.
And I'm Paige Pierce, and today we have on Albert Tom. We are hoping that he can give us some insight on what it's like to be an international traveling pro, but also even more than that, just what it's like to be on the pro tour. And for those of you listening who are asking yourself, what do I got to do to be on the pro tour? Or, you know, like, what is it like to be on the pro tour? I hope he's going to be able to give us all kinds of insight on that. So let's bring him on.
All right. Hello and welcome, everyone. We have Albert Tom on the podcast today. How are you doing, Albert?
Thank you. I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
We are very, very happy to have you. We are wanting to learn all about international disc golf and just disc golf travel in general. So first off, let's just start things off and maybe you can let us know how you got into disc golf. When did you start traveling?
So I kind of got my first pros in 2014. So I was playing badminton at the time, and I kind of picked it up from there. Like, a lot of players played it during their free time, and so I went out to play during the weekends when we didn't have any competitions or anything. And 2015 spring was when I got more into the game, and as years passed, probably 2016 was the first time I went outside of Estonia to play disc golf, to Finland, because that's where more accessible, higher level disc golf was available for me at the time, and it was I could travel alone to Finland, and I had the people over there, like relatives and friends who could help me out with the travel on the side and you know, keep it cheap.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then I think 2017 or 2018 was one of those years when I started to like go outside of Finland and Estonia, like a couple trips to Netherlands, played like most of the Euro Tour, so Sweden and Czech Republic too, maybe. Kind of like, yeah, so started to discover more of Europe. And 2019, it was my first time when I went to US. Funny thing, the first event in the US was Wintertime Open for me, 2019.
Okay.
And I visited that place last weekend. I just went to watch the Wintertime Open for the 5th annual, maybe, event.
What?
But that's, I just crazy. Went to watch it, but it was pretty cool to see how the park has changed and what kind of layout they were playing this year.
Yeah.
So I was invited, Håkon Kveset invited me to join him and Linus and one of his friends from Norway for a trip to the US.
Yeah.
We played Wintertime, Memorial, and Las Vegas Challenge, and then it was time to head back home. That same year, but later, I joined Silver and Kristin for like a longer stretch of events. We played Worlds and then all the way to the USDC.
Nice.
And after that, I kind of realized that the scene is here. Like, of course, I know the scene is here, but like, it's how important is it to be here? Because like the way the courses are on the Pro Tour, they're like pushing players to like get better, throw further, and like be more accurate. And so if you want to get better, that's the place to be. And yeah, have set my sight on the US pretty much since that time.
Interesting. So you think the Pro Tour, like, it makes players better because of the courses? Because in my opinion, I would think that it was almost more so like the level of competitors. Because, I mean, not more so, but just for me, when I think about Finland disc golf, or I haven't actually got to play Estonian disc golf yet, but when I think of disc golf overseas, I think the courses are incredible. I'm curious what your answer means. Like, I'd like to hear you elaborate on that.
Yeah, like that's a good point, that the level is so much tighter here. Like, if you miss a stroke, you're dropping like 15 spots at least. So that's true. Like, the higher the level of competitors, the more you're gonna push each other to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree on this, but I would say, yeah, especially like maybe not as much 2019, but like when I came back after COVID, the holes were so much longer and so much more, how to say, demanding, like pretty tightened up, and it's gonna get more like this every year. So I feel like now on the tour you need to have like a certain package, like you right. need to have like a standard default distance in order to kind of like do okay on the course. So yeah, I would say if you don't have a course, let's say you go out to play at a course and it's like all the holes are like 300 feet, you're not gonna throw 400 because the current target that you is set for 300.
Yeah.
But if you like, let's say you go to a different course, the next target is 400 foot and you're not reaching it at the first try, but then you have a goal, okay, this 400 foot basket, I want to reach it. And you're going to go maybe start to look like, okay, what I can do in my form in order to achieve that. And now maybe you get a 500 foot hole. And then like, that's my idea behind that the courses, if they're challenging you, they're, and that's the reason why also like getting better in a way.
Right. So both times when you came to the US, you traveled with people. Is that, would you say that's an easier way to go about it?
First experiences, yes. So yeah, those were the first trips I made with as a group. After that, I kind of realized what is important for me as a player and what I need to keep in mind if I want to do good. So definitely like traveling with people is easier and cheaper, but there's this like pros and cons.
Absolutely.
You have to keep yourself in mind too, like what is your routine and like how well you can apply it in certain environments.
That's a great question though, because maybe you could like elaborate a little bit on what your routine is and what that looks like for you on a day-to-day schedule.
Well, that's kind of, on the tour, you have to be pretty flexible. So yeah. You can't, I would say like, if you have a super strict routine, that's maybe not the best combo, can create a lot of tension. But for me, I play like one or two practice rounds per day. And then certain days I go to the gym also. So yeah, how to say, it's hard to like put a finger on like, this is my routine, because like, I would say my routine is, I have a plan. But if I don't feel like doing it, then I'm not going to do it. So I'm going to be like, how to say, playing by ear a little bit.
Yeah, I love that. You have to have routine, but you have to be flexible with it and adapt, because some courses you might need 10 practice rounds, it feels like. But other courses you might just more so be like making sure that your putting stroke is on or something like that. But something that I really agree with you on, and to our listeners who are thinking about going on tour, I think something that you said, Albert, was really spot on, was that at first, when you first try to go on tour, it's super important to make those connections through friends and travel with friends and, you know, kind of learn the ropes. But then as you've learned those ropes and as you figure out what's important to you, it sometimes gets harder to travel with people, because you might want to eat different things or practice at different times or practice different amounts. So I've later in my career found out that like you have to find traveling buddies who have the same motivations as you, or maybe you split lodging, but you don't necessarily split maybe the rental car, because you might want to do things at different times. But I thought that was a really good thing that people should think about when going on tour, is just think about what is important to you and how you practice, and make sure that you align with people that have those same values, I think.
Yeah, I think also one thing is there's also no other way to learn this than just through trial and error.
Yep.
Just like go out there, test out different options, and like this, you'll find what's the best combo that might work for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure before you hit the US tour, were you watching United States disc golf on the pro tour, on DGN and stuff?
I think we didn't have DGN at the time, maybe, I can be wrong, but Pros Productions, I definitely watched a lot of videos. And the coolest thing for me was whenever I came to the course, okay, let's say, let's bring Fountain Hills, hole one. Like from the camera, it looked like the most impossible hole ever. But like if you got there, it was like, huh, it's like scary as hell, but it's not as bad. So
yeah.
Some of the holes felt not as scary as they look from the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And then Also, one other thing was I've seen most of the US players from the coverage at that time, so I haven't seen them play in person, and like just being able to like play rounds with them and compete together, I saw like, well, I kind of can do the same things. And then it was like in some sort of way like a reality check, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah. So what happened when COVID happened? Because we know that that probably made you have a long, long break, right? So did that make you scared to try that US tour again?
No, like I knew that. Okay, so I'm gonna rewind a little bit. So whenever the first 2020 was when everything shut down.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like good thing for me because I was finishing college at the time and like I was about to do the US tour and everything, but it made me possible to finish college and then focus disc golf completely after that. But like 2021 was the year where like I started to feel like, okay, I can't do another year of full complete break from the US tour because people are just gonna get so much better. And I also saw from the coverage that the courses and people are doing more some insane shots, but we just don't have the complete access to it at the moment. And then I was like, okay, there must be some ways I can come to the US, and I started to look around a little bit. And eventually I found a way that if you spend 14 days away from Schengen area, which is like a hard to say, but a different area inside European Union. And if you spend 14 days away from there, you can enter the US. So I went for 14 days, I went to Mexico, and then from there I went to US and played Portland Open 2021. Yeah, I kind of felt that I'm a little behind. When I kept playing the events, it kind of like I felt like I gotta touch again how the disc golf is played on this level.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the European players that come over are so, I mean, your winters are so much colder than ours, generally speaking. You know, some people in Michigan or Minnesota or something might have really cold winters, but like you're generally a lot colder there, and then you come over here and you start the season out, it might be a little cold, a little windy, and it seems like you guys should be used to it. But I always hear like Henna and Evelina and and now you're saying like it's cold here still. Like, does that have, like, do you think that European players coming over may have an advantage or a disadvantage in that?
Well, okay, let's say if you have spent all your off season in Arizona or Florida where it's like mostly sunny, and you come to like, we're gonna have a pretty rough for the Vegas this weekend. So like maybe like 45-ish and winds. So it's gonna be pretty chilly. So I think maybe if you come from Europe and it's cold, like you don't really care that much because like you're here to play disc golf. You're already in the US, which is like a bonus. At least that's what I feel like. If I'm here in the US, this feels like kind of like a
exciting
treat already. So I'm like, just the weather, it's gonna be just like a random factor, and like everybody will have the same condition. So
yeah, so you last year for sure, when I put out my tour schedule, I saw you had put out your tour schedule in the same week and that we were playing almost the exact same tournaments. And I thought, you know, like Kristen and Silver, your old touring buddies, you know they're doing mostly an American tour, but nothing like you. Like, you went on a full-on American tour, and I wonder what made you make that decision, and if you, like, in hindsight now, do you think that it was the right decision?
Yeah, I feel for me to be here, play the tour full scale, has helped me definitely grow as a player and really, how to say, experience that being a touring disc golfer like on a full scale. So the reason why I'm able to do it at all at first is so I have a visa, so I can stay like longer durations here. I don't have to go back every 3 months. I had this vision for a long time, and I really feel like this is I'm not in the wrong place. I don't feel like I'm swimming against the current, so I feel like this is the thing for me. And definitely the challenges that that come with touring, I didn't really expect at first. Like, learning how to tour is a real thing, and I think that's something that's not really widely spoken about. Once you get on tour, you start, like, sometimes nothing goes to plan, like, some weird-ass things happen, and then you're, how to say, improvise, adapt, overcome, and I think that's also has helped me grow as a person quite a bit.
Do you have any weird stories that you're able to share with us on the podcast?
Oh, let me think. There's definitely, there were a lot of things that happened last year. I broke my side mirror in Portland. So that was pretty anxious moment. But it was like stuff like this happens, and like how you adapt. So luckily, half of my mirror, I have like two mirrors on the side. One is like bigger, one is smaller, like a wide angle. So like improvise, adapt, overcome, went to a Walmart, found like smaller version of the wide angle lens, and then installed it to my broken mirror. And I was able to survive like until that time when I got the mirror fixed then. So kind of like nice. Stuff like this.
Awesome.
That's awesome. And are you traveling in an RV, a van? Like, give us a little update about what you're traveling in this year.
I'm traveling in my RV, Bazooka Mobile. So yeah, yes. I have a Class C RV, and I feel this is, I felt pretty strongly that like touring in a van or in an RV is the way for me to go, because I'm a person that wants to have like some sort of a home feel.
Mm-hmm.
And like having a van or a RV, I know that I'm going to have the same bed every night. And that's the reason why I chose this way to tour.
For everyone who may or may not know, Albert's sponsored by Latitude 64. And I'm wondering, like, when you went from a European tour and then switched to the US tour in 2019, did you renegotiate your contracts so that they would help you more on the international travel and provide you with that RV or any kind of traveling costs?
I'm not going to go fully into details about it, but definitely my contract got a lot better if I showed my interest in touring US and committing touring here.
Awesome. So for the international players, that is something that sponsors consider. So that's really cool. Because, you know, all the time we, and especially in the middle of the season when a lot of the US players head over to Europe, it starts getting talked about more and more often that there's so many young guns coming up in Europe. And how do we get them over here? How do we make it worth it for them to come over here? And I think that's a lot of what we want to ask you today and hope that our listeners get from this is that, you know, the opportunities are very vast over here. And yeah, I just wonder if you can give any advice to some of the European kids that are coming up on what they need to do to get over here and what they should kind of be thinking about.
Well, my first recommendation is if you have the possibility to come here and just to get here, then take the chance and go for it. Yeah, there's no other way to find out if you really want to do it at first place if you don't come here and like experience the level and the competitiveness, and also like in some sort of way when you first come over, it's like a reality check too. Like you might be throwing like 500 feet, like be the furthest throwing guy in the village, but like if you come here, like every other guy can throw 500 feet. So
yeah,
that's kind of like I would say sort the guys who really want to do it and who don't, who are like kind of like 50-50 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And have decision time. And you don't have to sleep in a hotel every time. Like once you get here, people and the disc golf community is really open and friendly and welcoming. So if you say you have a problem and you don't have a place to stay for the next place, just ask people and like start communicating, and you'll probably find a place and really reasonable price, and or maybe find a host that might just like don't ask anything from you for the week. Mm-hmm. People will just help you out. And if you're looking for the funds, how to make it, then there is back in Europe you have many ways how to get that money, like doing fundraisers, doing some clinics and training. So there's definitely many options to gather those funds and come over here. Like that's at least my experience. I was mm-hmm. When I first came here, before that I was so I was going to college doing training, and then I was doing like sort of group trainings for people, doing clinics to gather those funds and in order to support my tour. Like, and when you're younger, you don't really care about some of the comfortables, like some comfort of life things. Like, mm-hmm. you can be without shower for more days than you think you can, and then if you just have a bed somewhere and roof over your head, you're fine. Like, just take the shot, kind of.
Yeah, it's the little things.
And it's kind of a scary thought, right? Like, I'm sure to some people that's like scary to hear is like, oh, just come and don't plan your tour too much. Like, people will just give you a place to stay. But truly, I think there's a good balance. Like, you want to have somewhat of a plan so you're not worried or stressed out. But really, I completely agree with you, Albert. It's been on tour, it's been such a welcoming community. And I think that everyone kind of feels that just in their local communities, but especially when you're traveling and if you're young and or if you're coming from outside of the States, it's almost more so where people will want to help you out. So maybe the advice is like, you know, plan your lodging like 1 week out, but don't worry about doing it for the entire time, because chances are you're going to find someone that will let you sleep on their couch and probably even cook you meals.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to take it. And also, like, if you don't have like a ride, I found, like, even myself, I've gotten some rides from some event to another, or given people rides from one event to another, then you won't be left hanging somewhere.
Say for the Americans that are listening, and those Americans that are somewhat successful on the tour, but they haven't taken that jump and gone to the European Open or played any of those European events. For those people wondering what it's like in Europe, is it similar to that as in the States, where people will help you out and say, hey, come sleep on my couch?
There are definitely examples I could bring up that it works, but it probably takes a little bit more research, I would say. But okay. There's definitely people that can help you out in the area. But I don't have that much of an experience regarding this in Europe.
This podcast is brought to you by Grip Equipment, the world's leading disc golf bag company. Since 2009, they've been at the forefront of creating the world's most comfortable, durable, and innovative bags on the market. Check out their wide variety of bags at grip-eq.com.
And how about you, Joe? Have your grip bags been holding up during the winter rounds in Canada?
Honestly, Paige, they do. The foot rails are amazing. And I find that when I have the foot rails on the bottom, I find that my bag doesn't get wet, doesn't get dirty. And when I'm putting it back onto my back, I actually find that my back is not getting wet either. So it's a win-win situation up here in Canada. So whether you're looking for your first disc golf bag or you're wanting to upgrade your gear, head to grip-eq.com today to find the perfect bag for you. How do you find the travel itinerary for a disc golf pro tour? Like, on the tour, do you get to sightsee at all? Or, like, is there any break time in between where you're actually getting to explore America? Or is it just mostly disc golf, disc golf, disc golf?
I mostly kind of do the disc golf thing. But whenever I see, like... whenever I see, like, okay, I'm in, let's say, an area, I know that Mount Rushmore, example, is not, maybe like 4-hour detour, I'm probably going to take that route. Like, I did some sightseeing quite a bit last year in order to see some of the bigger landmarks. I think it comes down to the feel for me. Maybe this week I feel like I just want to train. I don't really care about anything, but sometimes I feel I want to get my thoughts a little bit away. So maybe I go do some hikes in the nature and stuff like this. So yeah, it's like 50-50, I would say.
Nice. And what do you think about balancing like your media and sponsor obligations and your practice schedule? Like, I know for Paige, there's like a lot of this give and take and balancing and practicing. Like, you still want to get your practice rounds in, but there's still so many media obligations as well.
Yeah, and for you, Albert, like, you've been on the Jomez putting game countless times. I just watched an episode with you on the putting game. And so, do you more often than not take those opportunities, or do you sometimes have to say, I really need to practice. Like, how do you choose what is the most beneficial for you personally?
Whenever I get this, like, let's say, get a invite to collab in something, I definitely, the first thing that comes into my mind is like, first, how does it interfere with my training schedule? So priority number one for me is training. So whenever I see it's gonna be a little tight, then I'm gonna see like, okay, what I have planned out before I got this collab, and if it's not strongly gonna be interfering with, I'm probably gonna do it. And also, probably the main reason when I might not accept a collab is when I feel that I'm just exhausted. Like, I feel like the training already in that day is gonna be kind of pushing it. Then more than likely I'm just gonna say no, because I feel we have to be kind of like ready for the event, and I don't wanna gas myself out in order to like be part of something that like it's gonna be good for the visibility, yes, but I have to consider myself to be ready for the event to perform at my best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I can tell, like I play disc golf in Canada too, and like physically and mentally for myself, just even traveling in between Canada, it's physically and mentally draining. Do you find that for yourself in the States as well?
Well, definitely those trips to the West Coast and back are not fun, but you don't have to drive all day. It would be best and fastest probably, yes, but like you can do some, like, I don't know, drive like 4 hours, take like another 3 hours break to something active, so you don't kind of like fully get locked into that driver's seat. So yeah. I think it's that also depends on person a little bit. That's what I feel that this year I will probably have to navigate my time better behind the wheel in order to, like, first of all, not to lose the muscle condition, because like travel body is a tough thing, and like if you have an event coming later that week, it's not a fun thing to like go to practice rounds and not really understand how your body works. But yeah, I think it comes down to the personal preference.
So Albert, last season you went on the full-on American tour, and I would say you had a pretty successful year. You had 4 top 10s at Disc Golf Pro Tour events. 2 of them were Elite Series. The other 2 were Silver Series, including your win at Tallahassee.
Oh, yeah.
But I checked your PDJ page, and it seems as though your total earnings were $13,940. And so my question is, you know, it seems like when you say those events, right, you're like 4 top 10s on a very hard tour with very impressive players. But then you see that number in 14,000, and we know that you're on tour the entire year. For someone who may not have as much sponsor help as you, having a similar year that you did last year, do you think that it would be lucrative enough to make it worth it and to continue to be on tour?
I feel then it comes down to the question why you're doing the 4. Like, if you're doing for the money, well, questionable. But if you're chasing something bigger than the money, then definitely it's worth it.
I love that. Love that.
Yeah. That if is anybody amazing. Is listening right now and you take away one thing, that is what I want people to take away. Like, why are you doing it? I think that's amazing.
So, Albert, now I'm curious, why are you doing it? I want to know your answer to that.
Well, I'm not doing it for money. That's for sure. I'm not going to give you my full reason why I'm doing it, but for me, I've always kind of dreamt of being an athlete, and like, yeah, since a little kid, I had the same dream when I was playing badminton, and kind of from there, I just loved doing sports and like pushing myself to do it, being better, and like through trial and error, and I've found disc golf, and I feel this is the sport where I want to push the most, like push to be the best I can be.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And then achieve the best results that I can have.
Cool. Love that.
Do you think that badminton helped translate into your game? Like, I know it's a lot slower of like, what's the actual thing called that you hit?
Shuttle.
Oh yeah. I know the shuttle moves a lot slower than how fast you throw a disc, but I feel like it has a little bit of the same motion there.
Actually, it was okay. I don't know miles, but I think it moves twice or three times as fast as a disc.
No way.
When you put in badminton and you start to watch these rallies on YouTube, like some of the smashes they hit from, which are, like up and down linear motions, kind of like attacking shot. The guys, like how to say, they don't see the shuttle itself. They're just going for the reaction kind of.
Wow.
So it's a pretty intense sport. But I would say like for me, forehand came pretty naturally because like some of the shots are from the side, like as in badminton. And like a lot of the motions in badminton are from the wrists. So kind of like that strong wrist snap, I think also helped there a little bit. And then, just having that explosive base from badminton probably helped translate quite a bit into disc golf as the disc golf technique started to like figure itself out.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very interesting. I feel like I played a pretty heated game of badminton recently with Nate Sexton, and it was a lot more like intense than I thought it was going to be. And it did move faster than I thought. Same with pickleball. Like the actual wiffle ball moves a lot quicker than I would have thought it did. But yeah, it's cool to hear all kinds of different sport people coming in from all kinds of different sports and seeing the similarities and the differences. But yeah, I'm really fascinated by that.
What are your family's thoughts on you being here, Albert? What do they think about it?
They support me and understand that if you're gonna do it, I said like I want to do it at the highest level, and for me to be here, this is the highest level I can access. And
they've been quite helpful
through this journey and supportive.
Awesome.
Cool.
That's super cool.
Good to hear it.
Must be proud to see you there on coverage and all that kind of thing.
Definitely. I'm sure they're yelling at the TV, cheering you on.
Go, Albert.
So, Albert, I'm curious if you can give our listeners a little bit of insight on if they want to travel and play. Let's go more into the golf side of it. If they want to play the courses on tour and travel and come onto the Pro Tour, what skills do you think that they need to have to be on the Pro Tour?
I would say distance-wise, you need to have at least some sort of throw that can reach 500 feet. And then you should be able to throw, like, let's say, circle one. You should be able to throw out of 10 shots, 7 shots into circle one, like, on open field, like, no matter which way. Okay, let's take hyzer. So you got to be consistent. And putting wise, get the disc into the basket.
Yeah, right. Don't miss.
It seems so easy to say it. And honestly, when you just go out and play a casual round, like anybody can hit a 30 footer, but can you do it consistently? And can you do it when there's pressure? I feel like that's where it really gets challenging. When you know a putt's to win the Tallahassee Open, that's when it really changes. This is one of my last questions for you, Albert. And I know you wanted to steer clear of the money, but I know a lot of people that are wanting to go on tour, that is something that they are thinking about big time. So the last question revolving money is, for those people that are thinking about going on tour, can you just throw out your best guess on how much you think it costs to tour on average per month? Like, on, you think $1,000 a month would get by for a hopeful tour player?
Well, I'm gonna give you an example from last year that I had. So I was traveling alone. So I'm gonna put rentals, accommodation, and flights. So I was flying, so the first few months I was flying between the events because I didn't have the RV. And I'm going to explain why I made the decision to switch to RV.
Okay.
First of all, the prices have gone a little bit more up in the US compared to like the years in the past. So when I put my numbers together, I think monthly from February and March, on average, the month was like around 5,000 per month. That 5, includes 000. Rentals, hotels, flights. But the one thing, I was traveling alone and I was still under 26, so I get like a little extra price for
the rental cars.
For the rental, you know, the young driver fee. So that's some things to consider. And with the RV, I see that my monthly, the gas prices have dropped a little bit, but on a month, I spend tops $1,500 per fuel. And that's the only kind of the only expense to get. So I'd say these are the real numbers I have on my experience. And like, if you join up with a group, you can split those numbers already.
Yeah. And depending on the way that you travel, right? Like, I was going to say that 5,000 seems crazy, but when you're flying and you're renting a car, it really does add up. So I think the best way to do it is absolutely to get a car. If you can't afford an RV or a van, just get a minivan or something that you can put a bed into and, you know, live out of that for the time being. But yeah, that's awesome, Albert, that you shaved down like $3,500 a month. That's awesome. Jumping in the RV, and shout out to Latitude 64 for hooking up that opportunity. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. And one thing I would say, like, if you're from Europe and coming to tour here, then it might, you need to do a little bit more planning. You can, plan out your trip a little bit. Like, you don't have to fly to Vegas to pick up your car. You can fly to, like, let's say you fly to Texas, but you're going to pick up the car from there, drive here. You're already saving so much cost because of this. And you can just have that same rental for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. And you're already in like cutting way more expenses than you can think.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the tips. I feel like anyone listening is definitely getting some good starting points to jot down and start looking at how to get on the tour. First things first, like you said, they got to get 500 feet distance and try to get into the circle 7 of 10 times. But
and stay
after
consistent.
That comes, yeah. I think they can reference this and kind of get a good idea what it's like to be on tour. And that's really what we were hoping that you could share with us. So thank you so much for your expertise. And honestly, I just want to send you off and tell you good luck in 2023. I hope you have an even better year than you did last year, Albert.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun talking with you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Albert. We'll see you soon. Oh my goodness, Paige. We learned so much from Albert. We learned that routine is obviously very important, but you have to be flexible on tour. And I know you know a lot about that.
Yeah, that's something I related to so strongly. Especially me, I have a hard time like letting go of control or like knowing what my schedule is going to be like. I like to just know what my day looks like. But like you said, every day really is different on tour, and you have to find that balance of making sure that you're not stressing out and you're prepared. So come tournament time, you're not searching for a place to sleep. But really, if you're at one tournament, the next weekend, chances are a lot of those people are going to that same tournament. So you can talk and mingle and make new friends and split lodging or find a local that somebody has stayed with in the past and stay with them. And really it is about being flexible. So I'm very happy that he's had a similar experience, even being from Europe. He doesn't know as many people. He hasn't been on tour as long, but he's still finding that the disc golf community is approachable and very helpful.
Yeah, I think that just speaks volumes of our community and just the people on tour in general. Like, just everybody's there to help one another. And I think that just speaks volumes of that.
Yeah, and it's really cool when you were asking him about COVID and how that affected his tour. I know that the European players that I was speaking to, you know, Henna and Evelina and Knut, actually, they were traveling in an RV, and his dad was calling him like, hey, you got to get home quick before you get stuck there. And Hen and Evelina were scared to come back for a little bit. And it was cool to hear that, you know, not only was he not scared to come back, but he actually went further into the U.S. tour and made himself a full on, basically an American touring bro. But that visa definitely helps him. But something he said, Joe, about the U.S. tour that really hit me, that was cool, is like he was saying, being on the U.S. tour is like you're not swimming against the current, and like that you're going with the current being on the U.S. tour. And so I guess that's why you see all the Europeans trying to come over here, because it's more, like you said, more competitive. The courses are tougher and so many things. So that was really cool to hear his perspective on.
I also really appreciated that he said that it comes down to the why. Why are you doing this? Like, that's probably for him one of the biggest things, it sounded like. Why are you becoming a professional disc golfer? Why are you on the pro tour? And like, you have to really think about those things before you head out onto the tour.
Yeah, you do. And he was like, I'm not going to answer fully why I'm doing it, which I'm curious. I'm going to try to ask him again.
We'll have to ask.
But it was a really cool, thought-provoking answer, because now I'm going to go, after we log off here, I'm going to go sit and think about why am I doing it, you know? But the reason you and I both, Joe, wanted to make this episode was because we get this question all the time. How do I go on tour? How do I go on tour? What's it like? And for the people that are thinking about it, I think that's a good question to just ponder, because at first you might just want to travel. You might just want to see what the courses on the pro tour are like. You might want to see, am I good enough? You might want to try to make it a career. But what is that reason that you're doing it? And just knowing your first year on your tour, you're probably not going to be killing it financially. It probably is going to be a little bit of an investment, but is it going to be worth it to you spending approximately, from his perspective, $1,500 a month on gas?
Right. And if you go have the RV route. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it would be cheaper in a car, but you know, gas price, you know, give or take $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that's probably the better way to do it. Well, the cheaper way to do it, more so than flying and renting a car and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. If you can take the time off and commit to it, I think that's for sure the way to go about it. He was also saying some of the things, I found this interesting, that some of the things that he thought that you would need to have as a skill set to come out on tour is like the 500 foot distance and the 7 out of 10 into circle one. Like, I thought that was really interesting. He had specific stats, kind of.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. A perfect first step for you guys listening to work on. You know, you can't even come on tour and expect to place well until you can do those things. So that was cool insight from Albert, and to hear what it's like playing on an MPO card. Obviously, those are MPO numbers, but what it's like playing on an MPO card, and if you can't do that, how hard it is to find success. So, or maybe to even qualify for these events. So make sure you guys at home that are listening and want to hit the road, work on that. Get your distance up. Make sure that you're accurate enough to get inside the circle and give yourself those opportunities for putt. And then, like you said, be able to get it in the basket. And then after that, find a group to travel with, to split costs with, and make sure that you have routine but flexibility.
Yeah, thank you all for listening to this episode. We really hope that you took away some valuable tips on how to travel, whether that's internationally or whether that's just even province to province or state to state. But if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can always email us at approachable@jomezpro.com, and we will answer all of those questions. Or even if you have any ideas for next season's podcast, we would love to hear those as well. Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks for tuning into Approachable, presented by Grip Equipment, empowered by Jomez Pro.